Welcome to episode 304 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts. I'm not sure where you guys want to start.
Bill Harris.
I'm CU Stebbing.
And I'm the very jet-lagged Melissa McDowell.
How are you all doing, kids, even though we've already had this conversation for 20 minutes?
This one feels like it's been coming. Like I think we took a longer, this feels like it's a longer break between episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has been.
Are you okay with that, Bill? I know that.
No.
I know that's a problem for you.
I need my podcast love. Yeah.
It's the separation.
Adrian's not giving it to me, so I got to get it from you guys. Come on. Sorry, Adrian. I love you, buddy.
Come on. We're better lovers. Let's be honest. Okay, that came out all wrong. But let's start. Let's just go right into the movie, shall we? We'll promise that, because I don't even know where to go from there.
Marina, this show's never been awkward before.
Never.
What are you talking about?
It's never awkward. Come on now. We're all friends here. So we're here to talk movies. I don't even know. Like, how do we even usually do this thing? It feels like it's been so long. I don't remember how to podcast. I've forgotten. So our movie of the episode, I guess, Evil Dead Rise. We'll jump right in, because why not?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Do I start this one? Because,
I've taken Evil the Dead, handle. Take it away.
I've taken the handle.
I think you should. It's only fair.
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, and I mean, it's obvious that I fucking love this movie. And I had to throw an F word in front of it just to illustrate exactly how much I love this movie. And like, honestly, and with total partiality, it's like my favorite movie, one of my favorite movies of the year, for sure. If it stays on the list, who knows? Who knows, right? Like, we're in May now. But I don't know, like, this franchise, there's everything about it, including the TV show, where everyone that's making it, whether it be a different person, everyone just gets it. To like the core of what Sam Raimi started in 1980, like they understand it, and this movie is no different. And I mean, the mean spiritedness that's like contained in the whole series is very funny in this one as well. And I will say it's probably one of my favorite title cards of all time because it's
pre-credits. Easily the best pre-credit scene of the year.
Yes.
Yeah. It rocks.
Yeah. It's so cool. And on the big screen, it's fucking glorious. Like, I was like, oh, like I was like into it.
The title rising up like that. Yes. It's just like, yes.
It's just pure perfection. I don't care that you telegraphed the drone hit. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. Like, just, I was hook, line, and sinker into that movie. And it doesn't let up. It has such great callback moments and big hero moments, big monster moments, and a lot of originality within Lee Cronin's work in it. That kind of like he's wearing the Evil Dead franchise like a skin, and it fits well. So yeah, I love this movie. So I might as well start with just me giving it the flowers that I think it deserves.
That was the wearing the skin metaphor there. It was like pretty dead on accurate there.
But I think that's okay, because I think you hit on something, Steve. I think one of the reasons this franchise has managed to survive and do well over the years is because, like you say, everybody that's involved really gets it. And I think part of that is probably Raimi being very selective about who he passes and who he allows into the universe, sure. Right? And to take on the franchise. And that's proven in the films and, like you say, the TV series. I didn't love it quite as much. I think it has some really great moments, but then I have very mixed emotions and feelings about Evil Dead as a whole. I've liked bits and pieces of it more than others. It's just not really my type of horror, generally speaking, but I will say there are some really fun moments in this movie, if fun is the right word for it. And there was a lot of stuff here that is just like mind-boggling how they've managed to achieve it. Like, I'm always really taken by the physicality in some of these horror films, because you sometimes you can't really tell where the physical ends and the CG begins and the prosthetics kick in. And there are scenes here that it's like, how the fuck did they do that? Like, it is so, so good. And I am not convinced that it's not all physical. there's so much here that's just super creepy. And I thought I had seen The Hole in the Ground, Lee Cronin's first movie, but I rewatched the trailer and I'm like, I don't think I've seen this movie, but Jesus, like, he was perfectly selected to take over Evil Dead, because even in the trailer for that, his feature, like, there are like clear indications of his love for the genre and for what Raimi is doing and for what this franchise has done. And he, like you say, he like imbues it throughout. Like, it feels very much like it's part of like the bigger Evil Dead universe, and it fits so, so well. I enjoyed it. I thought it was like a lot of fun. Like, can you even say that about a movie that's this brutal? Like, there is so much blood. Like, Colleen would love this fucking movie. Like, all I thought about was Colleen and geysers of blood, because this is so her thing.
Shout out to Colleen.
Shout out to Colleen.
I really liked it. Tell you the truth, I think it might be my second favorite Evil Dead movie. Evil Dead 2 is probably the best of them all.
Not probably.
Four. Dude, yeah. No. 3 is the best of them all.
Yeah.
Sorry, Marina. No.
Two.
Okay.
No.
I really enjoyed the apartment, the condemned apartment, and how they use that as like a vehicle for like how the evil worked and how people couldn't escape and stuff like that. Fuck the kids. I could care less about them. the mom and sister were, I thought, were really great. Alyssa Sutherland and Lily Sullivan, both great.
She's gorgeous. Like, they set up that she is gorgeous, and like, it's so crazy to see her shift. Like, that was.
Well, that's, she has such a great face because it's so angular and it's beautiful, but then it's really easy to make her like whacked out ugly also. like just, she just has one of those faces that, yeah, it's just all angles.
And so, yeah, there's an earthquake and one of the titty sucking parasites, aka kids, finds the Book of the Dead and the neck and some vinyl, you know, gonna play a little vinyl. And meanwhile, shitty looking Book of the Dead, wasn't quite into that. I have like a DVD from like 20 years ago that's like a Anchor Bay Necronomicon, and it looks better than that piece of shit. That's my only problem with the film. The Book of the Dead looks kind of weak, except the teeth were kind of cool.
I like that aspect, the teeth clasp. Yeah, I like that.
So yeah, the stupid kid, you know, after he's been kind of warned not to, maybe don't play the vinyl and don't play with the book, but it wouldn't be much of a movie if he stopped, you know. So shit happens. Horror ensues.
Blame EDM.
Okay, that too.
Blame EDM. Yeah. Just listen out to that EDM. It was the influence. He didn't know what he was doing. He was like records. Yeah.
So yeah, the horror comes out and horror stuff starts happening and people are eating glass and really cool shit like that. I'm like, this is an R-rated studio film. This is pretty gnarly for an R-rated studio film. I don't quite know how they got the rating on this one, because it gets pretty, as Maria said, it gets pretty violent.
The cheese grater.
I looked away. I was like, holy crap.
The plant of it, just like the stop. And then they go, and you're like,
yes.
Ooh. You know what I think it is about that scene, though? There's probably not a person alive who's ever used a box grater who hasn't accidentally nicked a finger. So you know exactly how that feels.
Yep.
And it's just like, yeah, that was the only, I can handle all the rest of the gore. I was like, oh, fun. And then the cheese grater, I was like, whoa, my stomach did flip flops.
It's in stereo to you because you know. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm watching the film and I'm like, this is really fast moving. I'm really digging it. They're doing nothing to piss me off. They're not degrading the Evil Dead franchise in any way. If anything, they're making it better. This is a home run. How can you not like this film? I think it's really good. And I'm happy for a movie that was supposed to be direct to streaming, which wow. would have been a holy mistake because it made money. I think this is a home run.
The sound design alone warrants that theater experience. Even the simple things of like the fly, like, you know what I mean? Like there's just certain yeah. things to it. I mean, the sound when even in that intro scene where she proceeds further into the cabin, right? Like, oh, there's so like Cronin knocks that movie out of the park. Like if there are horror Oscars, well, I guess the Fango Awards, it's gotta be taken a bunch this year.
No, that I think that on a technical level, this movie is really well made. Like in addition to, I did note the sound design as well, because it is so impressive. Mm-hmm. And horror movies generally tend to have really great sound design. I think they get True. Often overlooked because it's not just about the jump scares, and there really aren't any jump scares here. Oh, there are a couple, but they're very nuanced. And mm-hmm. there is such great work, especially like you mentioned in that opening scene, in that opening pre-credit sequence where, and I have to tell you, the entire time I was like, how the fuck do we get out to the country? Like, where is this going? And then it happens and then you figure it out. You're like, oh yeah, this is kind of genius actually. But the other thing that I wanted to mention is Jason and Kim Dougherty, who did the FX and all the practical effects. They do a lot of horror films, but they also come from the Weta Workshop. So these guys are not fucking around. Like they know what they're doing. So everything looks like that extra mile, like that head scalping scene, like right from the get-go, I'm like, seriously, we went there? Okay. This is what we're in for. All right, bring it on.
In the first 3 minutes of the
just
film?
Just to set the tone. And that she comes stumbling out, like to have the added effect that she comes stumbling out. Ugh.
Yes. And then it falls. It's just so well done. It's yeah. so well done.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
She loves her Emily Bronte.
She certainly does. I appreciate the Emily Bronte references, okay?
Does Warner Brothers see fit to go further, though?
So? I would hope so.
There is.
Like they make another movie, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so.
Do they? I mean, because it's a good, it's a good movie, and I think it's like being well received.
Start it from when she's rising out of the water. That's yeah. part two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Like that's cool. Almost your opening shot just to jar everybody. Like she's already just like in the air.
Yes.
Like, fuck
like,
it.
Were you here for the other one?
Don't you think that's why they set up that pre-scene? Like
I would fucking
it is
hope
to
so.
Wet everybody's whistle for the next one, right? Because we all want to go back so. To the cabin.
No, but how rad would it be if they just played the first 5 minutes again?
Yeah, right. And this time we don't go into the future, or we don't go into the past.
Yeah, like what the hell is going on? We watched oh shit!
Yeah, we've already seen this.
Yeah,
that would actually be really great. Who's okay? Who? I hope the studio execs are taking notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
Lee is listening. Lee, yep. You know, we're giving you pointers for the next one. Yeah.
I won't even ask for a producer credit. Yet. I'll probably regret that decision, so I'm not going to stay pat with it. But
did we totally talk over Melissa's thoughts? I'm sorry.
No, I hadn't really jumped in. I mean, I liked it. I don't think I loved it as much as you guys did. The gore was really enjoyable for me. I thought the performances, aside from the woman who played the mother, who was fantastic, not just yeah. looks wise, but also like her performance, I felt like was perfect, both as the mom and as the crazy undead creature. But the kids and the aunt, like the kids especially, were quite wooden. I thought.
See, I hate the kids.
You know, it just wasn't. They weren't super compelled. I didn't care when they died. Like that's the whole thing. Like shouldn't you care? Shouldn't you care when they die? I don't know. I was just like, oh, I wish that had been like gorier and cooler every time one of them died. I did really like the sort of like the nod to Rob Bottin and The Thing.
Yes,
the creature at the end. I was like, all right. I see you. I see you, FX people. I like you. I'm into Rob Bottin too.
I love the hallway sequence, and just seeing that kid get pasted against the wall is just like, I did not expect that to happen.
The old man's got a shotgun. He's going to save the...
No.
You know, as soon as he walks by that peephole with that shotgun, shit is going wrong for him. He is not making it.
And it's funny because there's no, like, clear assholes that are like, that guy deserves his fate. Like, even that dude with the cigar, like, he asks if people are okay. Like, he's concerned. Like, he's not like this boomer douchebag, right?
But not true.
Nope. Nobody gets saved.
But it is funny to me, though, that you, like, because, yeah, you see the kid in the hallway die. Like, usually when a child dies on screen, it's like, it's much guarded. More impactful. It's much more impactful than what happened in this movie. So is it just that we're, like, jaded freaks? Or, did they just not set that up enough to have that kind of shock impact?
Once you've seen many kids killed and, I don't know, once you've seen the house that Jack built, it's... on, you know, just everything is just secondary.
Wow,
greatest VIF screening ever.
I can't. I watched that with my mother-in-law, and she fucking loved the movie. Okay, so I can't even imagine what a screening at VIF would have been like.
They had grief counselors in the lobby at the Rio.
I'm sorry, come again?
I didn't have grief counselors. No, people walked out. People walked out at the scene you think they did, at the most sexualized violent scene is when most people walked out.
So, like, very early? Very, very early?
That's not that early. Like the Riley Keough scene?
That's terrible.
That was the first place people left, and the second place people left was the kids dying.
Okay, yeah. So they made it through the tire, the jack stand scene.
Yep.
We could recount this whole movie because it's fucking horrifying.
But I was gonna say that fucking movie, man.
Oh,
Jesus.
Obviously, it's a descent through hell. Like, come on. Thanks, Bruno.
Just Gunn. Another day for a little Von Trier, you know.
It's
just
commentary on violence and creation. There's like an intellectual underpinning to all that violence.
No, good thing it's all coming from such a good place.
Melissa, I wasn't sure if you were being serious or not. Yeah.
No, I'm like totally serious. Like I don't know. I got something out of that movie. It was a difficult watch. I still got something out of it though.
It's funny because over the last year or something, we've had all these directors making films about catharsis or about their own catharsis, you know, with Jamie Chazelle's Babylon, you know, Fablemans for Spielberg, Armageddon Time for James Gray, and Lars von Trier sitting back and being like, I make all my movies for my own catharsis. What the fuck are you talking about? They're all just for me. They're not for anybody else. Fuck everybody else. I hate everybody else.
This is very much in keeping with Lars von Trier, I think.
That's exactly how ever since I've got a few films deep in it, I'm like, he just hates everyone. He hates all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first von Trier movie, was it Dogtown? The one?
Dogville.
Dogville.
Oh my God. Like, that murdered me when I watched that film.
And then Mandalay, and it's just like, oh, you want to layer more on top of this pain? Cool.
And we got totally off track. Well, not totally. It's still, you know.
We're never talking about Lars von Trier's not needing walls.
Okay, well, we were talking about a very effective child killing scene that created the exact level of shock and disgust that it really should when you see a child murdered on screen.
It goes with Bill's belief, fuck them kids.
Fuck them kids.
For me, it was just like at that point, there'd been so much death and violence already. It's like, oh, look, somebody else is dead.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. It was all shot through a peephole. I like it.
Maybe we were all jaded by the movie by that point. That we're like, man.
I was okay with it.
It was just a number by that point.
Pretty much. Are we keeping track? How many are we down now?
Yeah. Wait, where's that other guy? He hasn't died yet.
Pretty much. The eyeball thing was hilarious.
The eyeball thing was hilarious.
I laughed so hard at some of these scenes, and I'm sorry. I did love the Evil Dead 3 callback. I want a chainsaw any day of the week, man. I'm like, Dan, they're going to go there. They're going to go there. He's like, no, they're not. I'm like, yeah, they are. And they did. It's okay with it.
I still, with the chainsaw hand beats just a regular chainsaw. And also that chainsaw would not have kept running when somebody let go of it. That's not how chainsaws work anymore.
Ash rigged.
Why it's an old chainsaw. I don't know.
That's not how they work.
Why do you got to bring realism to it, Melissa? Do you know what's the really funny thing about it is that, like, Evil Dead 1 was like a video nasty in the UK, mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. really incredibly like harsh film, and it's nothing compared to this film.
I would not say that Evil Dead 1 is nothing, because I would say the tree rape scene is that, like, that one, that's hard for me. That's why I usually skip watching Evil Dead 1. I don't like that scene at all. I wouldn't say it's nothing today, because I still think that scene in particular is really hard to watch.
And I mean, even I think in the grand scheme of things, the first film is still pretty effective overall. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a couple of years since I've seen it, but I didn't see it until, you know, probably the late 90s. And even then, it was kind of, even after all of those other horror movies, it was still, and I think it's still a pretty seminal piece of horror filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that camera work, right? Like that pushing in, like where you're like the spirit who's about to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's super impressive.
Yeah. I mean, and those are the most effective shots in this movie too. Those are the most effective shots in every single movie in the Evil Dead franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could go with that.
It's their eyes. That's the icon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Evil Dead icon right there.
But it never gets tired. Like, that's the thing. That could be so cliche. It's never cliche. It is always impactful every single time.
It's so good that it's welcome in other Raimi movies. You're like, hey, it's like comforting. You're like, oh yeah.
Wait, did I just see that in Spider-Man? What?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Doctor Strange, you're gonna give me a little Sam Raimi push in? Oh, okay, I'm here for it.
I'm here for it.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Drag me to hell.
So I think it's safe to say that we all enjoyed it in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Recommended all around, I think, yeah, even Melissa. Sure.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'd recommend. I mean, if you're a horror fan, you're going to dig this. If you like really gory movies, you're going to dig this. There's like, my criticisms are minor. It's a fun time. It's a fun watch.
Well, which we didn't actually talk in advance to see what else we would talk about, but I think maybe, Bill, I know you've seen this because we talked about it pre-recording, and I don't know if anybody else has, but Beau is Afraid. That was our other option for movie of the month. So why don't we dig a little bit into that?
That's my sob story, as I don't have it in Penticton.
And I haven't seen it, so.
I got to watch it at the oldest movie theater in Baltimore, the Charles Theater.
Cool. With, like,
about seven other people on Thursday night. But yeah, I thought I got to watch this before the podcast, and I was on vacation. So I figured I would go to the nearest coolest movie theater that I could find. And that was it. So
that's pretty awesome. So guys, tell us about Beau's Afraid.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay. I think, so it seems to me, like, from what I've heard and seen in various reviews around town, people either really dig this or they really are not into it at all. If you go into this expecting Hereditary or Midsommar, that kind of horror, this is going to throw you, because it is not that at all. I heard somebody say this is more of a nightmare film than a horror film, and that is probably true. Without spoiling anything, I can tell you that this movie is really working through some mommy issues. Like, I don't know what Ari's mom is like, but There's something going on here. There's something going on here. I think he was digging deep into that well. It's an Odyssey movie about a guy who is incredibly neurotic, except that everything that he's afraid will happen happens. That's basically the premise. I don't know if you agree, Bill.
And mommy issues and anxiety. The anxiety issues are there. As you said, don't expect Midsummer, because this movie's hilarious. I don't think I've laughed so hard in a movie this year. Like, it made me laugh so hard. And Joaquin Phoenix is just incredible. He's just on another level. The thing about this film is that I don't think it's as weird as people are saying it is. I think it's actually kind of straightforward.
It gets really fucking weird, man. It does
get weird at the end, but I thought this movie was pretty straightforward until the end.
And then the end goes completely off the rails, and you're like, what am I watching? Yeah.
But I think it's maybe the best film of the year. Like, no hyperbole. Like, I think it's that damn good. He's just a really
interesting filmmaker. It's only May. What?
He's a really interesting filmmaker. I can't help it. I've been thinking about this film since I watched it. And it was like 3 weeks ago. Like,
this is also one where you could watch it over and over again and you'd pick up different things every single time. Mm-hmm. There's so much in here. Like, there's so many Easter eggs. There's so many references. There's so much codified stuff in here. I think you could probably watch this a million times and you'd always find something else. I don't know about you, Bill, but I felt like within the first 5 minutes, I was in. Like, full on in. I was like, yes, I want this. Because it basically just starts with him in a therapist office. And then, so you get the sense that this is like a neurotic guy and he doesn't know how to deal with his mom. And then he leaves and you're like, oh, okay, this is not the world we live in. This is like the worst dystopia ever.
Yeah, the world around him is very strange. And okay, and also, No spoilers. It has the greatest needle drop of the year. There is a song in this movie that you're wondering, did the person who licensed this song actually read the script? Because it is fucking awesome. it's going to kill you. It's hilarious.
I'm cinematically dying without this film. The fact that it's been out since April 21st and it's now May 17th and I haven't fucking seen this movie, the fact that I can see Zizou I have access to Zizou before I have access to Bo is Afraid.
It's because it's three hours. No small theater wants to program a three-hour movie.
Why is A24 so against putting stuff on VOD right away? I know they want to make money, but like, it's been a while.
How long did it take for Aftersun? It took that one forever. There's still not a real Blu-ray release except for getting it through the A24 store, which I did.
Yeah.
Because I'm a nerd.
And that movie is killer.
Oh my God, that movie stabs me in the heart.
It's so good.
It's so... So haunting.
I will say too, like, Bo is Afraid, that the 3 hour runtime, you do not feel it.
I absolutely do not feel it.
No, I didn't feel it at all.
I was with it right until the very end. And then like when it at the end you just lose your mind because it's nuts. It's kind of nuts all the way along, and then you're like, how are you topping the nuts? Like, it's already nuts. So yeah,
with nuts.
Yeah,
that's all I'm gonna say, with nuts. But Melissa got it. Okay, cool. It's I can't wait for you guys to see this. Like, honestly, it is that damn good. I think it's gonna break you guys pretty good. It's great. It's the best film of the year.
I don't want to be broken. Why would I want to be broken?
You're not gonna be broken. You're gonna chuckle through most of it and then puzzle at the rest of it. Basically, is what's gonna happen. Because it is so wildly, like, yeah, it's just, it like, Ari Aster is one of the most creative people working in film, yeah, period.
I would agree with that.
I will say that I'm very happy to know that it is not hereditary, because I don't think I could handle something else of that nature. So I'm ready for a more lighthearted, if strange, trip.
That is definitely what this is. It's basically, it's good. Like the Odyssey. It's like the Odyssey, but really skewed and very dystopian.
More director catharsis. So this is like another layer of director catharsis.
Yeah, yeah. I think Ari's working out some mommy issues here.
I wonder what Robert Eggers' catharsis will be. That's what I'm wondering. Like, when he makes his cathartic movie, what's that one going to be?
It's going to be glorious.
I lump a lot of these filmmakers together because they're like my favorites. So whenever I think about Ari Aster, I think about Robert Eggers, and I just keep like kind of like spiraling from there, right? So
the Robert Eggers one's going to be like, this is a film about my childhood. I invented a language just for this film.
Him and his brother just speaking back and forth in like some like old English. Yeah. Like,
and you know what? I will be there for it.
Yeah, right. I want it to be like,
I am crazy.
I want it to be like the movie Hot Rod, but with like that.
Wait, that, did you like, just dialogue. Make a Hot Rod reference? I think you're my new favorite person.
Hot Rod is a fucking masterpiece. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a high five.
Yes. Yes.
Fucking love that movie.
I adore it.
So the best thing about my screening of Bo was at the end of the film. So, people are leaving, and I hear somebody in the background going, "What the fuck was that?"
I also heard that at the end of my screening. So,
yeah. And I'm like, "Oh, that's a win."
Yeah.
We worked that dude. He paid money to watch this film. That's awesome.
And he stayed through the whole 3 hours. That's the thing. If you stay through an entire 3 hour film, and at the end you're like, "What the fuck did I just watch?" To me, that's like a perfect film.
Well, totally,
because you can't lay the full claim to fame if you didn't make it to the directed by, right?
Yeah,
but like this movie like is divided people.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, and I do think it has to do with people are going in expecting Ari Aster in the same vein as Hereditary and Midsommar, and this is just totally out in left field. Like it is not. It's really not like in the same, it's not in the same category of films at all.
Well, I just love that people are attacking this A24. Like, how dare you let Ari Aster do this with your money? And it's like, what? Do you know how fucking movies work?
Clearly not.
Yeah, like, pipe down. It's part of film Twitter that I'm like, fuck you.
Do you know what the original name of the film was?
No.
Devastation Boulevard.
Right. That was the greenlit name for it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think they made the right call. Changing.
I do too.
Without the context, I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I think again, like if you go with something like Desolation Boulevard, I don't know. Like either that either sounds like a melodrama, or it sounds like you're going back into the like into the horror kind of category. So yeah, I think Bo is Afraid is because this is a weirdly whimsical nightmare.
Yeah.
There's some great character acting in here too. Like, okay, anytime I was like waiting for Parker Posey to show up because I love her. And she's phenomenal. She's so great. Her big scene is fucking hilarious. You will die laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Richard Kind was great, and he was mostly voice acting. Like you hardly even see him in this movie, but he was great. Nathan Lane was fantastic. Amy Ryan too is really great. I don't know who. She's always do you know who great. The young actress was that played the young girl whose room he was staying in?
I don't know.
Kylie Rogers is her name. She was also terrific as like the worst teenager ever born. yeah. Like it's a really terrific movie full of like insane characters and even more insane scenarios. Like I would like to wander around in Ari Aster's brain for like 15 minutes just to see what it's like. Cause it's, yeah, No one's doing this kind of shit. Like, nobody. There's nothing in this movie that's derivative, I don't think.
Have you listened to the A24 podcast before?
Yeah.
The Ari Aster, Robert Eggers episode where they try to keep tying everything back to Bergman is so fucking great. it's like two pals and like that bounce their own movies off each other all the time, it seems like. And it's just, yeah, I mean, to know it, it's very humanizing because just knowing Ari Aster from what he creates is like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, who is this guy down to his core? I have no idea.
Was it Eggers on Marin where they were talking about the Northmen more or less bombing at the box office?
Yes.
And Eggers was furious on the podcast. He's like, I can't even talk about this. It pisses me off. Like, what is wrong with people?
That's his movie.
Yeah. Like, he's like, why didn't people come and see my movie? Like, it's great.
I know.
It has a Star Wars moment in it.
It's so great. Like, it's commercially, but people just weren't into it. Sad.
Well, hopefully by next episode, you guys get to see it.
Yeah. I would really like to come back with an update and be like,
yeah.
But I mean, unfortunately, I'm not going to get to see it in the context of you guys. Like, because I mean, the big screen is a really, like, big deal for me.
Well, in this film too, because it's an epic. It really is. It's like Homer's Odyssey. Like, it is. It's an epic. This is an epic story. It belongs on the big screen. I get like this. This would have been nuts on an IMAX because that's where they opened it. Was IMAX?
Did they open in a double feature with Pi?
But yeah, I don't know if I like. Yeah, this would have been quite overwhelming on an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
But it is, it's a really epic, it's quite an epic scope film. Like,
Ari Aster.
It's great.
Ari Aster is the new David Lean. Like, let's go.
Oh, shit. I love that. I love that as a sentence. I'm such a mark for that kind of shit, but.
Yeah. I like how two of us didn't see Bo is Afraid. We talked more about it than we talked about Evil Dead, I think.
Well, I just rattled off in word vomit at the beginning. So then I was just kind of like spent. Like, that's anything I have to say about Evil Dead. Been saving it.
Yeah, I think there's more to dig into with Bo. It's like, it's too bad that didn't work out. Because, yeah, I don't want to spoil you guys either.
It's a shitty place for movies.
Yeah. But a good place for wine.
Yeah, yes. That's true. That's true. I can drown my sorrows about movies.
What's next, Marina?
Well, I don't know what else opened last 2 weeks. Okay, let's talk about the one that nobody wants to talk about, but I've actually seen the Super Mario Brothers movie. Come on, Bill. You know you love it.
I already shit on that last episode.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Bill took a shit on it. I said I was okay with it.
Yeah. Bill shat on it, and Steve defended it as something his daughter dug.
Yeah. And as somebody that is now... And now that somebody that has now seen it, I can kind of go with Steve. But I'm kind of on the thing with Bill as well, because it's not great, but it's okay.
No, but as we said last episode, that first 10 minutes where it shows us what it could have been frustrates me so much, because then it just becomes nostalgia of the movie, and I don't care for that.
It's a Super Mario Brothers. Like, the entire time I'm like, well, of course it's this, because what else is it going to be? Like, seriously.
But at the same time, right for a higher level, like Lego Movie did. But I know, but it's an Illumination film, so fuck, you know, what do you expect?
It's going to be that middle ground. Because that's where they own that middle ground.
Yeah.
They don't have to excel beyond it, because they're going to succeed every time. Like, it's like built-in success at this point.
I will say it does look really, really good.
Oh, it's very really, pretty. Really,
yeah.
But and at the same time, it's obviously not for me. It made $1 billion. Mm-hmm. People dug it.
Yeah.
I love that you say it's not for you, Bill, but you're the only person I know that sees fucking everything that comes out. Every movie is for you, man. Like, you go to see everything. You see stuff that I would never in a million years pay money to go
see. No, you're wrong. You're wrong. Later on, I'm going to talk about something that I didn't see, but Steve saw.
Well,
why don't we get into some other stuff that you guys have watched? Because I've watched nothing else other than one other movie, and I'll talk about it at the end.
Have any? So Marina hasn't seen it. We'll guarantee this one. But Blackberry? Did anybody check out Blackberry?
I saw it.
I loved this movie.
Matt Johnson. Oh my god! He's a genius.
So good, and like. I mean, Operation Avalanche was like my favorite movie.
Best Canadian movie ever.
It was
hands down.
So damn good and so beautifully inventive. And this movie, like, I saw someone call it the Canadian Wolf of Wall Street. I'm like, okay. Like, I'll latch on to that. But I mean, at the top of it all, Glenn Howerton is a force of nature in this movie.
That hair is real. It's crazy.
He cul-de-sacked himself like big time. And is this
streaming somewhere? Because I see a trailer for
it's
this.
It's just theatrically. You know, if you talk to the right people at Elevation, they'll probably just shoot it your way. But because Elevation is all about this movie, they're huge on promoting it and everything, and because it fucking deserves it,
they should be.
It's a great movie, and beyond Howerton, who is like. Operating on awards level, like it'll never get recognized on that level, but he is so damn good in it. Jay Baruchel's really great too.
I love Jay Baruchel. I think he's underrated. I really do. I think he's great.
Yeah. I'm a huge Jay fan for sure. And
the secret weapon of the film is Matt Johnson.
Yes. Doug is such, he's the guy that doesn't want to grow.
Yeah.
He wants to have movie nights and he wants to just pal around as his little startup company. He didn't want to fucking go to the stars. Like, I mean, the BlackBerry had 46% of cell phones at the height of their popularity.
Crackberry.
Right? I didn't get one. The Bold, which was like the second to last phone I think that got made by that company. And I was like, this phone's really cool. And they're gone.
I can honestly say I never in my life had a BlackBerry. I thought it was the devil's spawn. Like, I am not joining that cult. It's like the Apple cult. Never went there either.
I've never had an iPhone, and I never will have an iPhone. But yeah, I can.
I'm with you.
Oh, I signed up for both cults. I got a BlackBerry for work. Like back when they were out, and I was like, once you type on a BlackBerry, though, like honestly, like switching to typing not on a BlackBerry sucked. It was awful. I still miss typing on the BlackBerry.
I'm legit looking up where I can see it so I can go and see it this week.
I was just in New York, and I had an evening to kill before my mom got in to meet me. And so I was like, oh, I should like see what's playing. And I looked at IFC because I really wanted to see something there. And BlackBerry was one of the films, but then, so I was going to go see that. And then I saw that they were doing a screening of Monica with Patricia Clarkson in attendance. And I was like, well, I guess my decision is made. And I was able to get a ticket that day to go see that. So I did that instead of BlackBerry. But that's the only reason that I did not see BlackBerry on Friday.
So you didn't support the Indie Canadian film?
No, I supported the indie film featuring a trans lead, Bill.
Okay, okay.
don't try and social justice war me, because I'm going to win.
Dude, you're talking to the person who is known for hating Canadian film the most. Yeah.
It's so true.
Wait a second.
Also, I have two Canadian films on my list that I'm going to promo on this show in just a moment.
There we go.
I might have one. I actually don't know if it's a Canadian film or not, which makes me feel really stupid, actually. But back to BlackBerry, I really liked it too. It's quite great, actually. it's a really fast, snappy film. And I had no idea really what happened with BlackBerry other than everybody had one.
And then nobody did. They went from everyone to no one.
And as you guys said, they all talked about the keyboard and all this stuff. And it's brought up in the film that everybody loves the keyboard and the click.
Yeah,
and it's it's a really fun film. And I was, you talked about how you were in on Bo like 3 minutes in, like 2 minutes into the film. The first song is a NoFX song, and I love NoFX, and I was so into that. I also think this is one of the best films of the year too.
I've had a
really good couple of weeks here where I've watched a bunch of really great films. And the fact that it's Canadian even makes it even better, because we should all be standing on the rooftops about this, because it deserves way more than it's getting. And
I just think Matt Johnson is so great. Like there was the movie about the school shooters too that he did.
The Dirties,
which was fantastic. Yeah, The Dirties was fantastic. Operation Avalanche blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And also their guerrilla tactic of actually filming that at NASA. That was crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. But then to top it off, because he always kind of plays those sort of like slacker stoner, like bro-ish characters. But then did you see him act in Anne at 13,000 Feet?
I have not seen that one, actually.
That movie is brilliant. It's super good. But yeah, he plays it straight in that film, and he's good. Like, I think he's just really talented all the way around.
Yeah, as I said, he's the secret weapon of this film. He's like the glue. He's really good.
And beyond that, and NoFX, Needle Drop, the whole soundtrack fucking rules. As a guy that listens to 90s and early 2000s playlists all the time, like, I'm like, I really like this soundtrack. Like, if you put it out on a vinyl, I'll buy it. that's shouting that out there for everybody.
Don't get it if you find it in the basement of a derelict apartment building. No vinyl from there.
Titty sucking parasites.
Yeah. Fuck them kids.
Were you guys at the Dirty screening at VIFF at the Cinematheque? It was the first screening. And Matt Johnson, like, legit looked like he was so happy people actually just showed up for his film.
I don't think so. I think I saw a screening at, if I remember right, at Cineplex, the Grenville 7.
It was a really cool Q&A because he was just so happy people showed up. He's like, I thought nobody was going to be here. I thought I was going to be that guy at the film festival who had 10 people show up to his movie and we all just sat in the lobby and drank coffee. Like, like, he seems like a really cool dude. And this feels like a step.
He was super nice too when he came for Operation Avalanche. Cause I think I was volunteering at the Rio when he did the screening there, and he was great. He was super nice to all the staff and the volunteers, and yeah, just really like, really lovely guy, and did not seem to have an ego, despite the fact that like a lot of the stuff that he does, it's like you can't have any hesitation. Like he takes massive risks in his films, and but he definitely does not come across as like an asshole at all.
Very cool. Anything else for I got a bunch of stuff. So
did we cover How to Blow Up a Pipeline?
You saw it last episode, but you hadn't seen it.
And I raved about it, I think.
Yeah.
So
also good. One of the best films of the year.
Yeah, insanely good.
Yeah.
Then I'll make just a quick touch on something if I've already... Because I already brought it up, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But crazy taught, like, one of the greatest heist movies in a long time. That's not really a heist movie.
No, but it's valid.
Yeah,
like, it's sure edited like one.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of a David McKenzie movie.
Yeah,
like I get close to that one. The one I just quickly want to talk about because it's opening this week is Master Gardener, Joel Edgerton, Paul Schrader.
I saw that movie in January.
Oh, okay.
At the Mighty Victoria Film Festival.
Oh,
Wow.
I got a screener. I got a screener from VVS, so I had to wait and not see it on the big screen.
And you know who was supposed to be there? Paul Schrader.
What?
No, really?
And he didn't show up.
Just like didn't show up or like canceled early?
He canceled the day before.
Fucking guy.
Yeah.
What is it with Paul Schrader and character dramas where he brings out possibly the best work of their career?
Yeah, Joel Edgerton.
Really?
He's so freaking good in this movie. And I really liked Quintessa Swindell.
Yeah, sounds right.
I think I might be saying that wrong. It was supposed to be Zendaya. Money reasons canceled that. And then this actress gets brought in, who I've only seen in Black Adam, which is not a good way to judge any actor. But yeah, she was really, really good in this. Sigourney Weaver is formidable, is the best way to describe her in this movie. She's just a really good performance. And it's funny we were talking about Reichardt and that quietness, because Schrader can do that very well as well. And I think he exhibits that quite well in this movie, especially with the underlying like secrets that Joel Edgerton has and the juxtaposition of that. I think it's very interesting.
I'm totally here for this late renaissance of Paul Schrader. Like, just
right.
He's just writing whatever he wants and putting it out. And it's not major studio stuff. It's all indie, and he does whatever he wants, and it's all great so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say most of it's been really, really top notch material, better than some of his earlier stuff. So yeah, I'm with you there.
First Reformed is probably his crown, right? Oh, like that's the center jewel, right? Genius. Yeah.
He wrote a couple scripts in the 80s, which were pretty good.
Yeah. You know, like possibly one of my favorite Scorsese films of all time, but whatever. You can glaze on past that one. But I mean,
just one of your favorite Scorsese movies of all time.
But of this, you know, rejuvenation or the critical rejuvenation, because I think he was largely kind of like forgotten about. Like, remember The Dying of the Light, the one that he did with Nicolas Cage and stuff like that? Like, he was basically like, you know, he was paired next to like Seagal Walmart bin movies for a bit, right? Like, it was kind of like releasing with the same energy. Was it First Reformed that it was like, holy fuck, you guys got to pay attention to Paul Schrader again?
I think that was the one that's the one that woke up the sort of the critical mass. Yeah. And people were like, oh, what's he doing? Like, he's actually making good movies again? What's happening?
Right?
Yeah.
Anybody else got any before I go?
Sure. I'll throw in the only other movie I saw. I saw Strays, which is a streaming on Netflix.
What? It's fun, hey?
I thought
it doesn't quite get there, but it had so much potential.
That's what I'm disappointed about. And I think maybe you had mentioned it, and maybe that's why I watched it. Because I thought it looked really, really interesting, and the concept I thought was really fantastic. But yeah, Melissa, I'm totally with you. I think it almost gets there, but it doesn't quite deliver. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, because like, I think the story works. And like, there's so much of it that does work. Like, Ashley met Medeksui, I'm sure I've said that wrong, but I think she's fantastic. The performances all around are great. It's just the pacing feels off. And I think it might be a part pacing and part editing. It just doesn't feel like it has a lot of energy, which is really sad, because like, the concept is great and the execution. The concept is
really interesting. Like, there's just a lot in here. There's a lot in here around race, and there's a lot in here around like motherhood and the ways that we judge mothers.
Yeah.
That's why I thought this movie was interesting, because there's something there. I don't think it fully hits all of the marks, but I thought it was really interesting, and I thought the concept was pretty cool and not something that we've seen a lot of before.
No, and I will say though, the execution is like top notch. The cinematography is great. The music is great. But yeah, there's something missing, and I can't quite figure out what it is.
I think you're right. It might be pacing and tension, maybe.
Yeah, but overall, I still enjoyed it, and I would say I would recommend it. It's just not like with the highest regard, but it certainly showed a lot of interesting ideas, and I did like it. I thought it was pretty decent.
I thought you were talking about the animated dog movie. Yeah.
No, not the animated dog movie.
Yeah.
The Will Ferrell, Jamie Foxx dog movie.
Yeah.
This one was one of those Netflix dumps.
Yeah.
It's one of those Netflix dumps. The Strays.
The Strays.
The Strays. And yeah. There's one coming up is just Strays.
Yeah, and it looks fucking terrible. And the fact that you think that I would talk about that.
You're like,
oh, garbagey this looking movie. No. No. It's like,
so that's not what we're going to cover for an episode of After the Credits.
Oh, you want to, you mean you want to watch Beverly Hills Chihuahua too?
Wait.
Like that's kind of what that is.
Kind
of. Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry. We'll watch the Bad Taste away. Bill, get us with some movies.
Okay, I got a few. I know you guys have seen a few of these, so we can all talk. Renfield is okay, and I know Melissa hates it. So
I had fun with it. I enjoy Nicholas Holt, and Nicolas Cage fucking rules in that movie.
But the problem with the movie is the actors are better than the film.
Yeah.
The actors are better than the film, and
that film is so badly written.
It's a mess. It's a mess. But that
Cage is having fun.
That recreation of the Lugosi. Oh, it was
so good.
Because I just watched that movie recently for the horror podcast I do. So it was super fresh in my mind. So to see them act, to fully recreate it, I was like, okay, that was cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I didn't hate it. I thought it was fine. I thought the actors were better than the film, and they deserve better. And it probably should have been better. Mm-hmm. It's like a late night Netflix film all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also weakened because I'm watching the current season of Nora from Queens. So I'm like, she's like indoctrinated my brain at the moment right now. So
I like Awkwafina. Again, this movie was not a good vehicle for any of those people. They were way better than the material.
Ooh, okay. Steve and I are on a boat here.
Yeah, that's okay. We just love Nicolas Cage so much, we don't want to let him go.
Yeah. I saw the new Makoto Shinkai film, Suzume. Makoto Shinkai is like...
God?
He is pretty much God. He's made three films, and they've made more than the last five Pixar films, probably. Oh, shit.
He is the animation god. No joke.
Your Name, Weathering With You, and Suzume have made over $1 billion at the box office.
That's insane.
This guy is gold.
And nobody knows his name other than like film people. And he continues to make really great films. This one's it's not as good as Your Name, but you know, what is? it's a film about a girl and her chair. I kid you not, chair, because it's a Makoto Shinkai film, go across Japan trying to stop earthquakes caused by demons or something. I don't know. I give it no justice. It's really good. The animation is stunning. He just makes really cool films. He's always trying something, and I really dig that. It's more than Pixar is doing. It's more than Illumination's doing. He's just trying something, and he's one of the great filmmakers in the world right now. And more people should know his name. So,
can I plug? I'm going to plug one of the first film of his I ever saw was a short film. It's not really short. It's like 20 some odd minutes, and it's called Garden of Lost Words, and it's literally about a guy, a drunk, drinking in a garden. And this is 25 minutes long, and I cried my eyes out. I've never cried so hard in an animated film in my life. I was like, okay, so who the hell is this guy?
Yeah, he's pretty special. The fact that it opened pretty wide in Canada too, which makes it even like cooler. Like people actually got, and it wasn't dubbed. People actually got to see it subtitled, which was very cool.
Yeah, so this one was picked up by all of his previous films have been picked up by G Kids. This one was picked up by Crunchyroll, which is a bit different. Mm-hmm. So I was curious. I wasn't really interested to see what their release strategy was, and they seem to have nailed it. They really know their audience, so clearly they knew what they were doing when they picked this up. I missed it. I'm so sad. Like, it was playing at one time every day. And I'm like, how am I supposed to make that time? I'm at work. God damn it. Very disappointed.
I saw Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. Not The Covenant. Guy Ritchie's The Covenant.
So that means wait, The Covenant, was that the one with the guys that were witches from the 90s? Okay, then I'm not interested.
Sebastian
Stan
was in that.
Right? Okay,
he's
see,
the bad
I remember
guy.
This.
He's the villain of that movie.
So I was like, what the
it's
fuck?
Terrible.
I'm like, dude, it is it's pretty bad, but it's also pretty.
I think it's Rennie Harlan. Rennie Harlan directed that movie.
Did he? Oh, okay,
yeah,
so maybe
it's a
not.
Rennie Harlan
I'll watch
movie.
It.
No, you don't have to watch it because it's a Rennie Harlan movie.
I was like, there were a bunch of hot guys. That's all I remember, okay?
I just want to put that out there as a general rule. You don't have to watch a movie because it's a Rennie Harlan movie. If it's past in 1994, you don't have to watch any Rennie Harlan movies. Just putting that out there.
Sorry,
okay, sidelines. Yeah. Sorry, Bill. Guy Ritchie isn't any better than the Rennie Harlan movie.
It's actually pretty good. It's weird. This is the second Guy Ritchie film to not open in Canada in a row.
After and Operation Fortune, which is actually pretty good too.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was for what it was. It was fine. This is it's really well shot. A lot of really cool drone footage. The story is really compelling, and Jake Gyllenhaal is really good. It's a really competently made film that probably should have been on the goddamn big screen. I'm kind of getting tired of it.
Does it look like a Ritchie film? Because Operation Fortune doesn't either.
No, doesn't.
Yeah. Like, he's a studio director now, isn't he? Like, to the fact that you can just hand him a movie and it'll look like a, I don't know, like a Rick Roman Waugh movie or something like that. Like, he just does the standard movie. Even Wrath of Man is kind of not, it's got simple Ritchie-isms to it, but it's not a Ritchie film. Like, And like, this is the guy that won me over in Lock, Stock, and Snatch. And that guy's gone. That guy's not coming back.
No, he's not. Which is sad.
I think The Gentleman was the closest he got coming back to it. It was just the minuscule closest he got to being that old school Guy Ritchie. I'm not going to blame Madonna for it, but I'm going to mention Madonna.
She didn't steal his soul. He gave it up willingly.
Madge.
Or Matthew Vaughn left and went and did a bunch of really good films.
Yeah. Layer Cake ruined it all. Yeah. Layer Cake changed everything.
It's not Madge.
It was Matthew Vaughn and Jane Goldstein?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good film. I don't know why it didn't open. It's on VOD. Check it out. It's surprisingly good.
Who's the studio behind it?
MGM.
MGM. And that was the same with the Operation.
Yeah.
What is their problem with us?
I don't know.
Like, come
but
on.
But I would have loved to have seen it on the big screen.
Yeah.
It's decently good. It's a pretty good movie for what it is.
I have good news for you because Mission Kandahar comes out in 2 weeks. And it looks like the same movie. It looks like the same movie.
But it's Gerard Butler, which is not the same.
Plane is not the worst thing I've watched this year.
Only the second worst thing you've seen this year?
No, it's not. It's not. There's definitely worse I've watched this year.
Whatever happened to Gerard Butler? Gamer was really good, okay? Okay, sorry.
He's made a lot of money.
He has. It doesn't matter.
He's fine. He's doing okay.
I'm not going to elaborate about my love for Cop Shop. I won't do that. Not
here. did anybody see Are You There, God?
No.
It's me, Margaret.
It's Kelly Freeman Craig, though, and I should because I like her a lot.
It's really good. I never read the book. Marina said she'd read the book when I texted her about it. And this movie really got me. And if it got me, it's going to hit gangbusters with people who actually read the book and are really into it. Mm. And I don't know why this movie died, but it died hard and nobody saw it. Mm-hmm. And it sucks because it's a really damn fine film. And it sucks because, you know, you make a film like this and it bombs and now we won't get another film like this for 5 years or something like that. Because this movie bombed, and now we won't make a film like this. So
no one wants to see movies about 13-year-old girls, right?
Well, I think this is one of those that's going to find its audience once it does make it on VOD. Because I get the sense, knowing when I read it and nieces about that age, and they have no idea what this is. So it's very much of a time. So I think that the women that do remember, that have that experience with the book, will find it eventually. And I think it will find its audience. It just wasn't a theatrical audience, which is kind of sad.
But. Yeah, I don't know if girls are still reading Judy Blume. You know what I mean? Like, it was a huge thing. If you were a child of the 80s and early 90s, I can guarantee you read Judy Blume. I don't know if there's still resonance for the current generation that this would likely be aimed at.
You know what it is, Melissa, and I hate to admit this, but I've seen it. The only books that my nieces read that I read when I was their age are the versions of the same books that I read, but in like manga form. And I'm not even kidding. They've been turned into a comic book. Oh, that's okay.
That totally doesn't bother me.
Yeah, but this one has not made it to that. It has not been
graphic novelized.
No. The sisterhood, the Babysitters Club has.
Oh yeah.
So they're well familiar with that, but this one has not yet. So I think that that's where the disconnect is. So I think it will find its audience.
I think maybe they were just banking on like women our age having kids that were that age that we would take to this movie. But I don't know. I mean, I don't want to slag it, because I mean it's cool that they made a movie based on a Judy Blume book. But I mean, they must have made Judy Blume books into movies in the 80s.
Is Ramona and Beez's Judy Blume?
Yeah, I think Ramona.
That was Selena Gomez did that movie. Selena Gomez and Joey King. Joey King when she was a kid.
Oh, so maybe I wonder if that's like, I wonder if that, like, maybe they just needed a bigger Disney star.
Maybe.
But they have Carrie Russell's the biggest star in the movie, right?
I think, what's her name?
Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams. Right. Yeah, sorry.
She's the mom.
Rachel McAdams is that. Yeah, I got him mixed up there.
I also want to live in a world where Benny Safdie can get Rachel McAdams. Hello. Yeah.
Benny Safdie is in the Judy Blume movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Magic interest, yeah.
He's the dad. Okay,
that makes it more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
from Obi-Wan to Judy Blume. The Benny Safdie 2003. Or 2002 to 2003.
And of course, I got one more. I think Steve's seen this one.
Uh-oh.
Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3. Also one of the best films of the year.
Yes, Bill. Yes. Okay. Thank you. I was so worried. I know the fatigue is so strong, but Guardians is the perfect trilogy within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And a contained one that you can just really watch those movies and maybe a couple others from the MCU. And I kind of say that the holiday special should be in there too, but whatever. But yeah, James Gunn fucking gets it.
You know what? I hated Part 2.
Really? Okay.
I was not a fan. And as I said before, I'm really fatigued on superhero films. Dude, I was like crying 3 minutes into this film.
Oh my God. This.
I'm what not
have
even
you?
Joking.
Wait, you're not Bill. What the fuck have you done with Bill? I don't believe
I'm not even joking.
Yeah,
like this film hits notes that shouldn't be in a Marvel film.
Yeah,
it is so well written, and you get to you love these characters more than you probably should, because they're just a ragtag bunch of assholes. But it's to the point now where they're not that anymore, and everybody generally likes each other and wants to save them. Mm-hmm. Like, every time somebody's in peril, they're all friends. They want to save them. Everybody loves each other. And I'm like, this is so good. Like, this is so not what the Avengers is, with fucking everybody fighting with each other and bitching. And it's really well written. I cried a lot. The soundtrack is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not joking, one of the best scripts of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, full stop.
Yeah. And it's Rocket's movie.
Yo. Yeah. Rocket, man. I wasn't even a Rocket fan. Like, yeah. And he's the story here is so good. You two are going to watch this film and you're going to be like, Bill was right. It's cool. It's fine. Steve was right. It's fine.
You know? Yeah. We can let Bill cry. It's fine.
Yeah.
Bill can cry. I'm okay. Bill and I have seen each other cry like uncontrollably. It's fine.
I'm pretty sure we've seen each other's after screenings at VIFF where we're just like, devastated.
Oh, Whistler, man. Whistler is where Bill and I always see each other cry. Bill sees me cry. I don't know.
I always cry at the center or the playhouse. Like, Son of Saul, coming out of Son of Saul, I like wanted to die. I was like, I am dry. For
Marina, Whistler Film Festival.
Yeah.
Lion.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Still to this day.
I watch that movie.
I fucking cry every time. You know what? I've also started crying when I watch it. I don't understand why. Tracks. I watched Tracks. Didn't cry the first time I saw it. I watch that movie now and I fucking bawl my eyes out every time.
You know my love of that film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was my number one film of the year that year.
Because it's so good.
Love that film. But yeah, see, did you cry during Guardians? Truth.
So much. me and my wife went to see it together and we kept like sneaking looks at each other and we're just like leaking. Just like puddles of human beings. And like for everything. Like there's just so much and you could just see James Gunn just lathering on there like, yeah, like I'm getting everybody.
I have a feeling this is going to be like that time I went to see Tool. And I swear to God, I was in an alternate universe. Because there were like six women in the entire arena. And we're all like, what the fuck is happening? This is like some sort of, it was like a weird bromance thing happening. It was very bizarre. I kind of feel like this is what Guardians is going to be like.
Yeah.
But weren't Tool great?
Oh, the Tool were great. Don't get me wrong. It was just very odd.
That's the closest I've seen. That's the closest I've gotten to religion.
Pretty much.
It's a Tool show. And I'm like. Yeah.
Guys, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure how I'm feeling about this Guardians love, but okay.
Okay. It's worth it. It's worth it.
It'll be on Disney Plus. It'll be on Disney Plus in 2 months. And yeah.
I can wait for that. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm okay with waiting.
Special.
I probably won't because I think, you know, we have to watch some movies and. Ben and I haven't been to the movies in a while, so
like four people are going to get this, but I think David House liked it.
How is this even possible? Four people are in this room.
But he's a legend.
He is a goddamn legend. Yeah. But that's it for me for movies that I watched. Did we miss anything?
Listen, now Guardians is like so high. If this does not deliver, I'm going to be so pissed.
Oh, boy. Well,
that's fine. I'm going to take it back to indie films with my list. Thank you.
Bring it, Melissa.
Hold on one second. I just got to go get a charger, so I didn't want to interrupt, but I'm going to be away for a couple seconds to get a charger.
Steve's like, I don't want to listen to Melissa's diatribe on any movies.
I just looked up, and I'm like, 16%? Jesus. So
that's because we're talking about the red again. Bar.
I'll be as quickly as possible here.
Okay, I won't say anything important until you get back.
Yeah, don't cut that out.
Yeah. This is staying in.
my humble brag about going to IFC in New York to see Monica, which is actually it's a really great film. It seems like a super timely release because it's a film with a trans lead. It's basically the story of a trans woman who is estranged from her family, and her sister-in-law reaches out to her because her mother is dying of cancer and it's affecting her cognitive behavior. So it's basically like she has dementia and she probably won't know who Monica is. So if she wants to come and spend time with her mother before she passes, they can do that without having a whole bunch of drama because she's probably going to be none the wiser kind of thing. Yeah, it's quite a beautiful, it's like one of those slice of life, beautiful films where she, you know, is able to reconnect with her brother and, spend some time with her mother and meet her, her brother's children, who are never gendered in the film and whose like behavior and clothes are not, don't follow traditional gender roles, which I also thought was really quite beautiful. And the kid, that one of the kids in this film looks like a mini Safdie brother. And it freaked me out the whole time I was watching it. I was like, how did they shrink him? How did they shrink him down? Because he really, really, well, they really look like they're part of the Safdie family. It was quite terrifying. But yeah, I would highly recommend Monica. I think it's a beautiful film. It's a really beautiful film for this particular moment in time when there's so much anti-trans hate in the world. I thought it was a timely release, but I guess they've been trying to get it made for years and years and years, and they just couldn't get it all together until just recently. So yeah. Patricia Clarkson was at the screening, so she did a Q&A afterwards. But also, so I sit down in my row, I'm on the aisle seat, and so this woman's like, "Oh, excuse me, can I get past you?" And I look up, and it's Stacey London from What Not to Wear, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like sweaty and gross and I should have worn cuter clothes. I'm like just having a full on freak out as like, I'm sure she's judging my outfit and she really doesn't give a shit. She just wants to get to a center seat. Yeah. So that was my weird,
movie watching in New York, right?
Yeah. Movie watching in New York at IFC.
That's awesome.
Doesn't Patricia Clarkson live above the IFC Center?
I don't know. She was quite tickled that they gave her a sparkling wine in a can. She'd never drank wine out of a can before. She thought that was hilarious. She seemed very charming. She was really charming. She was like name dropping Marty Scorsese and like, oh, it was a charming interview with her. Yeah.
Cool.
Because I've been on flights, in the last 2 weeks, I have to say, it's really cool that Air Canada is profiling Canadian films on flights now. Really enjoying that. And so I got to catch up with a couple of films that I missed at VIFF that I really wanted to see. So one of them was Rice Boy Sleeps. Have any of you guys seen it?
I missed that one.
I really liked this film. I thought it was really great. It's basically the story of a single mom who's Korean. She moves to Canada to try and give her son like a better life. Because she's sort of escaping a trauma in Korea. And it's kind of like all that tension of children of immigrants, the kind of pressures that they feel in terms of assimilation, the like bringing a lunchbox that everybody makes fun of you for because your food stinks and like all of that. But this movie is really well done, and it touches on some of the aspects of Canadian racism that I think, you know, like Canada's really good at pretending we don't have a racism problem. And so I think it's good for us to see these kind of stories where not only is it apparent, but also the filmmaker's name is Andrew Shim. And he wrote, directed, and edited this film. And I think it's loosely based on his own life as well. So he's like, he was wearing a lot of hats in this movie. I'm really looking forward to seeing what else he does, because all aspects of that film were very well handled. And also, Marina, you'll remember Holy Hum. Andrew Lee, he did the soundtrack for this movie.
Oh!
It is fantastic.
Because
he's fantastic, yeah. I think this is a really great, it's a really great little film. And it's a really great little film with really high production value for an indie. It doesn't have that Canadian feel. If you know what I mean.
Oh yeah.
Waiting for that.
Yeah. That was for Bill. I love Canadian film. Telefilm, don't come after me. And then the other film that I watched on Air Canada that I really enjoyed was Rosie, which is a story about a a young indigenous girl whose mother passes away, and so social services tracks down her aunt. And it turns out that her mom and her aunt had been adopted into a house. The aunt is French Canadian. The mother was Cree. And so the social services is trying to place this little girl with this French Canadian woman who is like between jobs, behind on her rent by 3 months. Her best friends are drag queens. And it's like just kind of, it's a, just like one of those charming movies about how people who don't think they want kids end up with a kid that really changes their perspective on life. So it was, yeah, it, I thought it was sweet and charming and funny. And yeah, go Canadian films, go. That's what I have to say.
Sure.
Bill, so skeptical. Come on, you liked Rice Boy Sleeps.
Come on, I've seen at least 5 Canadian films I've liked. Come on. And they were all by Denis Arcand or Denis Villeneuve. The Denis.
Wait, there's another Canadian guy missing out of that trilogy of Canadian boys.
Dolan?
Pretty much, yeah. The only one that really counts at this point.
No, but Dolan also made that really, oh my God. It was a screening. There was a morning screening for it during VIFF, which are always like tough because you're just so bombarded by so many movies. Then you're like, okay, I got to do this movie that's actually opening up on like a real date for everybody. Okay. And what is it called again? It's got a, I'm going to cringe as soon as I saw
it. Is it the assassination of something, John something?
No. The death and life of John F. John F.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's awful. Boy.
That movie is so horrible. There was one that he did right before that one though. It's not even in his IMDb list right now, so I'm feeling really stupid here.
Nice.
But then I Killed My Mother and Tom at the Farm were brilliant.
Yeah.
Mommy.
Mommy's one of the best Canadian films ever made.
Word. It's Only the End of the World.
Oh, yeah.
With Gaspar Ulliel. Rest in peace.
Who I really like.
Yeah, I know he's really good in it. Martin Cotillard's in it, an easy sell for me. And Lea Seydoux. It's like the cast is rocking with it. Vincent Cassel, like it's got everybody that I love, but the movie is just fucking dreadful.
I think there's a reason he hasn't made a movie in a while.
Yes. Well, I'm blaming It Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill knows what I'm talking about here.
I'm blank. Oh.
He dies in the first like 10 minutes of the film.
I have one of the most important characters in the whole book in the one of the worst constructed scenes I've ever seen. Actually, that whole bloody movie is just horrible, horrible construction in every way and just ruined all the momentum it had going for it.
My favorite Dolan death scene has got to be Martyrs.
Yes.
When I watched that movie again after like not seeing it for a long time, I was like, oh my God, that's Sylvia Dolan.
I haven't seen that in a very long time.
Oh, it's such a shock.
Because you can't get it on Blu-ray. It's out of print.
Yeah.
But he made that movie to make I Killed My Mother.
Yeah. I remember hearing that.
Yeah. Which is hilarious. Cause like watch that movie. Holy shit. But, before we go and before we do some other stuff, the Dune 2 trailer.
Oh boy.
Oh, can I have my kids? Let's go.
Yeah. Especially seeing like my movie goddess is now in the mix and I'm like so happy to see her.
Wait, absolutely. Who's your movie goddess?
Flo. Every day, Flo. I suffered through Don't Worry, Darling and watched her Herculean effort of carrying that movie because I love Flo.
I am sad
that I haven't seen A Good Person yet. And I know it's not a great film movie. I know it's not a great movie, but it's a Flo movie, right? It's the reason I was championing The Wonder when it came onto Netflix. You know,
Wonder is great, though.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Like it kind of speaks for itself once you can finally get into it.
It's still Lady Macbeth for me, though.
Oh, yeah.
I always think about those posture scenes of her just sitting in the sitting room. I think about almost every time I see her in a movie, I always like go back to that scene, those scenes. Such an amazing establishing role. Yeah, I'd never seen her before that movie, so.
But yeah, no, Dune 2 looks great.
Yes.
Hopefully they press screen it during VIFF.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little early, but let's go.
During the possible week where I might be out there.
Hell yeah, you're coming.
I really want to. I got to work it out with the boss, but I really want to.
So who wants to pick a film for next show?
I don't even know what's coming. You haven't told us what's coming out.
When is the next? Okay, so I mean, if we're going then, let's not go this week. Let's not even consider a movie from this week because we all know what's this week, and it's Vin Diesel and family.
Oh God, I've forgotten.
Yeah, could you forget? The ad campaign is like a barrage.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
I fucking checked out of that franchise like 5 movies ago. I'm not even joking.
I have a worse film that week for you. Honestly, I'm not joking.
Okay. For the week of the 19th. Okay.
Oh yeah. Okay. So Fast 10.
Yeah.
Opens.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it tomorrow. So yeah. I think Steve is too.
Same here. Yeah.
It's gonna suck. I don't like these films at all, but I just have to see them because I'm stupid. I don't. Melissa's right. I see everything, and I don't have no reason why I'm seeing this. It's gonna be terrible. Maybe they go to Mars this one. I don't know.
Who knows?
Oh, probably.
You remember, this all started from DVD players, so it could go anywhere at this point.
Yeah. So hard pass on Fast 10?
Yeah, I think we're worth it.
Not the movie.
It's Fast X.
There won't be anything to talk about. You know what I mean?
The cars aren't even cool anymore. That's what fucking pisses me off.
No one's driving a Lancer anymore. No one's driving a Lancer. That's the biggest problem, is nobody drives a Lancer.
Wait, are there even Chargers still in this movie? I don't fucking know.
Oh, no, but Vin always finds a way to get his fucking Charger in the movie.
Okay, good. That's all that's important.
It's going to have a rocket ship attached to it. I don't know. John Cena will be under it, over it. You can't see him anyway. It doesn't matter.
What a waste of Johnson. What a waste of a cast. But okay, sorry.
You should just be Peacemaker in it. They should just blend it and he's Peacemaker. I'd watch it even more. I'd probably celebrate it.
Okay, sorry, Bill. Sorry. We're sidetracked hard. No, not the movie.
Marina, you owe me a 230-kilometer hybrid car.
Okay, sure. Okay. I'll get Chevy on that, no problem.
As I said, there's a worse film this week. Did you guys know there was a White Men Can't Jump remake?
Oh, I've already seen it, and it's the okay. So the original film has Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, Rosie Perez, all these people with just like personality, and this movie has none of it. It has Jack Harlow, who is struggling to show that he has any emotion going on in that head of his whatsoever, slack-jawed. And I don't know who the other guy is, but oh my God. The only thing good about it is a couple minutes, Lance Reddick is in it. And that's it. That's the only redeeming factor to this movie whatsoever. So no, we should never speak. We shouldn't even acknowledge that thing ever happened. And Disney doesn't even really want to because it's a Hulu original straight to streaming. So they don't give a fuck either.
Wow. Okay, cool. I knew it was going to be bad. So
Steve has very lukewarm feelings about this.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely not bubbling or steaming or anything. Just
So May 26th, speaking of piling pieces of shit, The Little Mermaid. I've heard it's fucking terrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but who have you heard it from? Because this is the thing. That is a movie that is going to be review bombed to shit who don't think a mermaid should be black. For that reason alone, I actually want to go see it just to give it some box office because I think, Yeah, I don't trust anything coming out on this movie.
Just the mean-spirited shit around Halle Bailey's looks and everything. It's harsh. Yeah, it's going to be one of those movies that don't trust the audience score, because it's probably already nuked as we're speaking right now.
Yeah,
this is a tough one. My family's really excited for it, which, I mean, just being around that makes you kind of like excited for it, but there's trepidation. I'm not a big Rob Marshall fan.
Little Mermaid is my favorite Disney movie of all time. So I am in like a dirty shirt. I have seen none of the promotional material. I want to know nothing. I don't want to see what it looks like. I will say I have, generally speaking, enjoyed most of the live action remakes that Disney has done over the last few years. I think Beauty and the Beast is still my favorite of the bunch, but I think generally speaking, they've all been pretty good. So I'll see it. I'll take my niece to see it.
That's why I'm not into this, because I have not liked those at all. And this just feels like another ploy to make a lot of money for Disney. It's going to make
everything they do is a ploy to make a lot of money for Disney. They don't put out stuff because of art, Bill. It's Disney.
But that sucks.
Oh, it does suck. Of course.
Mr. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is a great movie that made you cry. Get out of here.
You will cry too.
You will cry. You will cry.
Disney did that to you. Disney manipulated all your little feelings, Bill, and they took your money and they laughed all the way to the bank.
Melissa.
I never said I wasn't cheap. Let's go.
I got to make a quick mention that The Wrath of Becky is out that day as well. And if anybody watched Becky, it fucking rules.
And the new Nicole Holofcener film. You Hurt My Feelings is out. And I can't. Yeah. She's underrated as hell.
And her last one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus was Enough Said, which is one of the last Gandolfini movies. And what a movie it is. I have such a heart for that movie. And the fact that we get Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies in this one. Yeah, I'm in. Yes.
Ditto. He does not get enough love.
Yeah. No.
Tobias Menzies is so good.
Yeah, I really praise his Crown work. I really thought he was fantastic in the Crown. I really like him. I've enjoyed him for years.
Outlander all the way. But okay.
I haven't watched enough of it to give a real discussion.
But yeah, the Crown is fine.
Yeah.
Crown's fine.
Okay, so are we going with You Hurt My Feelings? Is that what
I'm getting a screener for it, so I will have seen it. I see Bill's like, no.
Wait, there's more movies. Okay.
There's a Transformers movie. How can you
get out of here?
And this is skipping over Spider-Man too.
I know. So yeah, June 2nd, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I thought the first one was a masterpiece, so bring it on. This one looks just as good, even if it's 2.5 hours long. And part
Spider
one.
Spider Pig. Sorry.
Yeah, Spider Pig. You. Past Lives, which everybody is saying is the best film of the year. It was the big film at Sundance. It won Sundance. It looks like a Asian American Before Sunrise.
I'm in.
And I love those kinds of films. Let's freaking go. It's hopefully everybody will be able to see it, because I don't think it's going to open where Steve is, but he'll probably get a screener anyway.
I'm already in the begging process.
Nice.
Wobble as I will.
And last but definitely not least, Transformers Rise.
No, least. That is least. That is definitely
So I'm hearing the Transformers is the next movie, right?
No.
Don't you put your judgment on the Transformers here.
Did you see the trailer?
I couldn't even finish. I won't even talk.
You have another problem, Prime.
Stephen Caple.
Biggie Smalls.
It's Stephen Caple, though. This is the second film after Creed 2, which was much better than it had any right to be. I think we've discussed this on the show before. Yeah. So I'm like, how is Stephen Caple in this one? And I mean, and it's also following up a movie I liked from Travis Knight, Bumblebee.
Oh, Bumblebee is great.
Yeah.
Like, I will defend that movie, no problem. This looks like garbage.
Yeah, we have already had this conversation, especially, you guys. Yes. We have totally had this conversation.
This conversation,
before.
Right?
Yeah. That open battle scene where just, like, I don't know, everything is happening. It just seems like a lot.
There is a lot less cuts going on because Michael Bay is not there, though.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But
it doesn't
maybe
matter.
More
it's not going to be a good movie.
Yeah, there might be more Uncanny Valley. So,
yeah, I am not defending this at all. I don't want this one. I'd rather do Little Mermaid or Spider-Man. That's my picks.
I'm with that one. Because I also don't think if we're going I don't think we're getting Asteroid City the week after either. So.
So not Past Lives? I thought no.
That depends on if I get it. If all of my stuff comes through, and the celluloid gods rain on me, and I'm able to see possibly the greatest movie of the year according to Sundance. Who knows? I definitely didn't win the lottery for Bella is Afraid, so it's looking good so far.
Well, okay, what if we say Past Lives with You Hurt My Feelings as the backup?
Sure.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. Guaranteed okay. I'll get the Holoff I can't even say her name correctly right now. Apparently I'm done.
It's very late. It's been a long day.
I'm not even gonna try.
Okay, before we go. Bill's creepy letterbox trip here.
Oh, no.
Steve, did you really watch 80 for Brady?
I did. Oh, man. They sent me the Blu-ray. Their airbrush in that movie is working overtime. Whew. But like, I love the ladies in it. I will say that I love the ladies in it individually. I think they're really great. Especially like I adore Sally Field and always have loved Sally Field. Rita Moreno is a force of nature. And for me, my discovery, because people are like, oh, West Side Story. Rita Moreno for me is Sister Peter Marie from the Oz. Like that's my Rita Moreno. So I adore her so much. But expletive Guy Fieri, expletive Tom Brady, bullshit. Come on. I mean, your vanity project is so fucking sad. And the fact that he's never met the ladies in real life, the ladies that this movie's based on, like I made this movie about your life. He's never met them face to face before. And it really took me out of it when I read that later. I was like, fuck you, Tom Brady.
Well, yeah.
Fuck you, Tom Brady, period.
Yeah. Come on. It's just going, but you know. I'm not even a football guy, but
no, I was shocked when I saw that. I was like, yeah. I don't know whether to like shake your hand and say you're the greatest or like watching that
pay for my therapy sessions or
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Other than did you just watch Enemy for the first time, Melissa?
Yes, I did just watch Enemy for the first time. It's another one of those movies where I thought I had seen it and I hadn't seen it.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
How did I let this go?
Bill. You and your movie shaming.
This is why I don't update Letterboxd, apparently.
giant spider in the bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
is it Gadon or Gaden? How do you say her last name?
Sarah Gadon.
Sarah Gadon, she is luminous in that. I mean, she's luminous in pretty much everything. She's
pretty great.
Phenomenal.
I always knew
like,
that
you
she
just
was
can't
spider,
take your
though.
Eyes off her.
I think that Denny Villeneuve guy is going to go places.
Yeah.
You think?
Just a thought.
Oh, that's a pat. That's a vanity project. Oh,
if you think that's an ending, wait till you guys see Beau is Afraid.
Oh, snap!
No, no. Wait till you see Guardians 3.
Let the tears flow.
I am putting an end to this right now.
I think it's time.
The bullet has been put down.
Guys, that was great. Another great show. Thank you so much for the time. Okay, where can people find you guys?
Who wants to go first?
We're not letting Steve go first because he sounds too professional. So I'm Melissa McDowell, and you can find me almost nowhere except for Twitter and Letterboxd. I'm like almost never on Twitter anymore now that Elon owns it because he's terrible.
Yeah, such but a great handle though too.
What, at Melzy Tweets? That's my great handle.
I like it. It's a fun handle.
It's not creative at all.
But it feels like an OG one though, right? When the site was new, when there was so much optimism in the air, Jack's like, come and play, everybody. Yeah. Oh, you're Melzy Tweets, let's play. And now he's like this sellout piece of shit, and we have this fucking guy that walks around the sinks in his God. Anyway.
And on that note, I am Bill Harris. I have another podcast.
Ooh. Fuck you. You're cheating on us?
Also have another podcast, Marina.
But you guys know about it. I was upfront about this.
I have another podcast that hasn't recorded in over a year.
Oh, okay.
But friends, there is talk of a return. Of the green screen of death.
Oh, shit.
Holy shit. Adrian and I have been talking. This will happen soon.
Bring on velvet-voiced Adrian.
You've been first. You guys are first to hear. We are coming back. Adrian's been watching movies, so we're going to be watching some. We're going to do some shows. Finally, maybe even do our top 10 list from last year. It's June. I am on Twitter at SoundJam69, also on Letterboxd at SoundJam69, and I don't do Insta or any of that shit, so see you next month.
Wait, before Steve goes, I have to go because, he makes us all look bad. Marina, you can find me on Twitter at the Marina. I never tweet unless I post the show. And on Instagram is probably where you can find me. The Marina 2 for all my movie content. That's it. Right. Steve, is it lay the greatness on us.
All right.
It's time.
So I am at The Steve Will Dead on Twitter and Instagram and probably Letterboxd, I think, as well. Though I'm not a patron yet. I should fix that. My website's stevestebbing.ca. I am on The Shift every Thursday at 11 p.m. Pacific time, but that's a chorus radio show across Canada, so just find your local listings on that one. I am also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor, which is every week. The last ones we did was Racerhead and Lost Highway, which aren't horror films, but are horror films, but aren't horror films, but are. That's it for me.
I also invented penicillin.
I am Sir Frederick Banting. Actually, I went to that junior high school, that middle school, so I was close
to
him.
See? I invented podcasts, so there's
hey, that. Nice.
The queen of podcasts!
We're grateful.
Dudes, I am so old on the podcast front, I feel like I was there at the beginning. I really was. Why I'm not a millionaire, I don't know. I clearly do not know how to market myself.
I blame Joe Rogan.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
He took it all. Fucking
he took
jerk.
It all. We'll link to everybody's socials on the website. You can find show notes and timestamps for our conversation at atcpod.ca. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks, not a month. It'll be a little shorter than that before our next episode with the next one. So until next time.
Succession is still the best show on television.
Bye!